Shelton. It's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome into the latest edition. Hear that podcast, Growlin' Pollinger Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here with you for our lunch break live room. Happy Boxing Day to you, Jay.
Hey, same to you. I don't think I have anything to return this year. It's been a pretty good haul.
Really? Do you have a top gift? Did you get any meat sweats like you've got from the Arby's people last year? Some concert tickets? Anything that plays directly to your wheelhouse?
I did not get meat sweats. I did. My wife and all of our friends had a get together on Christmas night or on Christmas Eve. I, of course, was still in New England. And so they did this game where I don't even know how to describe it. You unwrap a tightly wound package while wearing oven mitts. And one of the presents inside was an Arby's gift card, and everyone decided I should get that even though I wasn't there. So,
well, you know,
that goes without saying.
People are here to take care of you, obviously. And I'm happy. did you, for everybody that was listening the other night, were concerned about whether or not you would find your way out of, Foxborough to Providence and find beer and some food. Was anyone open? Were you able to check that box?
I was not, but I just tapped out. I left after we did the podcast. I left the press box, went back to my hotel and wrote at my hotel. I wrapped up around 10 o'clock and I just said, I'm going to watch the end of Steelers Raiders and go to bed. And that's what I did. And I had a nice feast of Dunkin' Donuts the next morning at the airport.
Oh, man. Life of kings, we leave. Life of kings. All right. Well, plenty to get to. People have questions. Patriots, Bengals in the books. Bengals are 11-4. They've won 7 in a row. 1 week from today, Jay, it will be Bengals hosting the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football. And in one of the biggest games, Bills have won 6 in a row. Bengals have won 7 in a row. It's a rare streak. Jay, I texted you a little bit ago and I was like, I think we might be stumbling onto a very good Jay's Got Stats potential here. Because I didn't really know how to search it. I knew you would. When is the last time that you had two teams playing in either December or January, both on at least a 6-game winning streak?
So I want to put a qualifier that you can't just put this parameter in there and it comes back and says, this is it. I had to do a little searching. I could have possibly overlooked something, but I don't think I did. I think the last time this happened was 2012 when the Texans had won 6 in a row and the Patriots had won 6 in a row. They met on December 10th of that year and the Patriots blew them out.
And you said was there one the year before that?
Yeah, the year before, the Patriots were on a 5-game winning streak, and they went to Denver. The Broncos were on a 6-game winning streak. This was in Week 15 on December 18th, and that one also was not close. The Patriots won on the road 41-23.
So that was in the land – you're in the land of Tim Tebow and T.J. Yates in those games. So I have to go back and look through the box scores and some of the logistics of that. But that's how rare this is.
I mean, yeah.
That's really the thing here. To have two teams that are both this hot on these types of streaks that are clearly both atop the AFC playing for – you can't have – you know, you can have bigger stakes for a lot of different reasons because who knows if this is just going to be two teams ending up in the 2 and 3 seed and what happens to Kansas City and that Week 4 against that Week 18 against Baltimore may still end up being for all of it in the North. So there's a lot of different things at play. But as far as high quality regular season football with playoff ramifications, this is as much as you can check the box in bold, no question, on Monday.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge one. I can't wait to see the atmosphere. It's not just in Cincinnati and what the fans are like, but just, I mean, it'll be hard to gauge for us being there, but around the league, around the country, what everyone else, I mean, this could be a record-setting Monday Night Football broadcast. There's a lot of other people that are interested in this game because they know it's two of the best, and there's a lot of other people with playoff hopes kind of pending on which way this game swings. So it's going to be really, really interesting. Kind of like tonight's game. I not on the same level as far as talent, but I'm wondering how many Pittsburgh Steelers fans, that's a short drive to Indy, and they really need the Colts to upset the Chargers if the Steelers are going to sneak into the playoffs. I wonder if you might see some Steeler fans in Indy tonight.
Wow, that'd be some serious fandom. You're going to drive across the snowy Midwest to go root on two teams other than your own. That would be pretty bold, no question. Steelers-Ravens next week, flex into Sunday Night Football. So that will be a game that is, unfortunately, we were hoping that would be the game that would be on in the 1 o'clock window at our live show at 50 West. It will not now as they flex out, but that's okay. Still plenty of other football to take in. Bengals. Bills next weekend is the only game between two teams with winning records the whole weekend. So all eyes on Bills Bengals. Yeah, who knows? Maybe we will see some Monday Night Football ratings records smashed. Plenty of coverage for you on that. You have some questions. If you have a question that you want us to get to, just go ahead and hop up into the queue. Hop on there. We'll pull you on stage. And remember to unmute yourself when you hop up, and you can ask your question. And we'll talk it through. I see some people in the chat. If you have stuff you just want to drop into the chat, we will cycle through there as well as we go through that. Thanks, everybody, for taking some time. I know a lot of you guys have today off. Just maybe just sitting around, just thinking about Bengals stuff. We got plenty to get to. I see a couple of questions repeating themselves, which I know we will get to. But we'll start by bringing Aaron B. up onto the stage. Aaron, how are we doing, Aaron?
So I was just wondering if maybe you guys could give some insight on the mood or the vibe of the team with Hakeem Adeniji being the starting right tackle. I mean, I'm sure they're sad for Lael, but are they kind of panicking, or is there a confidence about it? Just kind of what your observations are.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because we haven't talked to these guys. I was in the locker room post game, but that's before they knew the extent of the Collins injury. Ted Karras has said this before, that there have been times when Jonah went down in games and Hakeem came in for him, and there was a couple series where Collins went down and Hakeem came in for him. And I remember him pointing out that they scored on every one of those drives. I don't think that's true, but they did continue to move the ball well. But that's a little different than, you know, coming in and doing a spot series or two as to now being the guy. These guys all work together. I'm sure they have faith in Hakeem, but it's obviously going to be a drop off from LC to Hakeem. Don't think there's panic or worry, but I think if you gave them some truth serum, there would be a little bit of concern.
Well, sure. I mean, Collins is a starter for a reason.
Right.
But he's certainly not been perfect. He's had his issues over there on the right side in pass pro in particular. He's gotten better and been okay. But I mean, if you go back and you look over the course of the season, he certainly had his fair share of issues, and your PFF numbers would have him towards the bottom of the league in pass blocking grade. Yesterday, Adeniji comes in and has 45 pass blocking snaps and gives up 5 pressures. No hits or sacks, but 5 pressures. Not great. Now, that said, you're right. I think there's a difference here in that In preseason and in those spot snaps he's taken, there's been a lot of optimism about Adeniji. I mean, the people in the coaching staff, the way that they talk about him, were really pleased with the way he stepped up, the way he played. Certainly when the Jonah thing happened in Cleveland, some other times during the course of the year, they really felt like, man, he's keeping it stable. And that's such a big part of it, especially out there on the edge. So I do think there's internal optimism. I do think there's confidence that it can be just the same. You don't really know until you fully get out here, because now teams can game plan for it. Now you can get teams setting him up, trying to put Adeniji in tough spots. But I go back to something that Burrow has talked about a lot, and that the Bengals coaching staff has talked about a lot. They worry so much more about pressure coming up the middle. He feels like he can handle pressure when it comes off the edge, where they can do it, whether it's with chips or whether it's with formational stuff or whether it's with quick game or just his ability to see it and work the pocket and avoid the rush, can help mitigate that becoming a huge deal. He can't be a disaster. But remember, this team went to the Super Bowl with Isaiah Prince playing right tackle and with nowhere near the same solid level on the inside that they have now. So I think it's something they feel like they can withstand, and we'll see how it goes forward. But for now, I do think there's a lot of confidence in who Adeniji can be. Before we get off this topic,
I was going to say, yeah, two other things on that were they went to the Super Bowl last year. Adeniji was the guard, and he was one of those problems with the pressure coming up the middle, and it's out of position there. He was a more of a tackle in college. So this is kind of they've got him back to as a swing tackle this year, more of his natural position, and kind of a blessing in disguise, the Hayden Hurst injury, because since Hayden Hurst has been out, we've seen Adeniji get in there as a second tight end, the extra offensive lineman, a lot more. And he has gotten more snaps the last month or so. It's not just been those spot relief duties of Collins and Jonah when they got hurt. He's been in there, not on an island like he will be now, unless, like Paul said, he gets the chips and the help. But he's not coming off the bench cold. He's been involved quite a bit since Hayden Hurst has been out.
Yeah. Certainly, Collins has brought you a lot in the run game, too. And so you're maybe losing one of your best offensive line run blockers, and you worry about that with some of the efficiency that they've seen there. That's probably your biggest fall off, but you know, it's something that they can start to plot and plan for. The other side of this, so I think what the most likely plan that would happen next, you've had Deontay Smith has been, you know, a healthy scratch almost all year. He would seemingly move up into that swing tackle position. Isaiah Prince is on the practice squad after they let him go when he came off of IR. Then they brought him back when he cleared waivers. They brought him back and put him in the PS. That was a little over a month ago. And so now you will probably see him promoted when they make the move with Collins. So he would be that fourth tackle on the roster in all options. Now, Sharping has some history there at Tyler. He can play some, but he's mostly here to be a guard and be your backup guard. So I don't. Again, we'll get more information as we talk throughout the week and figure out as they figure out their plan. I don't know that they haven't necessarily sat down and fully gone through it yet. You know, they don't really have to. Tomorrow's their Monday, if you will. So they're not even really into their full planning mode. But obviously, wheels are in motion on some of that stuff. The other side, we need to address from it, and I'll just go ahead and pull from the chat rather than go, because it's the first question in here by everybody's favorite topic on social media, stirred up by Peter Schrager today. So Big Wint's coming back, right? The chance for the full circle Big Wint narrative. Just when you thought someone couldn't end their career on a more perfect note than Andrew Whitworth did, going out with confetti falling all around him and his children in SoFi after winning a Super Bowl against the team that brought him up. Top that by then coming back to save them and play right tackle for their Super Bowl run, win a ring, two rings, one for each team you played for. Big Wit saves the day, comes in on the horse, right? White horse Wit rolling in.
Great story, but yeah, I don't see it happen.
It's a great story. I don't see that happen. I mean, there's inserting somebody who's been sitting on the booth. I know Eric Weddle did it. Offensive line is just a whole different animal. He'd be switching over to the right side, learning all the stuff. I'm sure he's a very smart man, obviously, and you wouldn't have any worries about him coming to understand how football is played. And who knows? I mean, I'm sure there's a text sent. Like, do you want to switch the hoodie for a jersey? Like, you want to consider it? I don't see that happening. But, hey, until we get confirmation, you know, I have messages out just like everybody else does, I'm sure. Until we hear anything for sure, I guess I'll say you never know. But that does seem highly unlikely. And it is a fun thing to yell into a camera, though.
I mean, there might be more legs to it if the Bengals had beat the Rams last year and Witt was still looking for that ring. But you're right. I mean, he goes out as a Super Bowl champion, NFL Man of the Year. I just there's some positions you can come off, you can sit on the couch and come up, come back without missing a beat, and O-line is not one of them. It is very intriguing. It's fun to think about, but I can't see that happening. And who knows, contractually, he may not have an out with Amazon to even do that if he wanted to.
Well, Amazon season's about to come to an end here, so who knows? But, either way, I'll keep you updated on that one, but I wouldn't hold your breath. That feels like a Dumb and Dumber, so you're saying there's a chance. As I think we would probably end up with that.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
All right, let's go back to the stage and let's bring David Y up onto the stage. David, how's it going?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Sure
can. Hey, thanks, Jay and Paul, for all your work. And enjoy listening to your podcast and reading your articles on The Athletic.
Thanks.
Thank you for subscribing.
I had a question or observation. Seems like to me the last couple of weeks, Ja'Marr Chase has been a little ho-hum, maybe in his demeanor. Maybe it's just me overanalyzing. But do you guys see anything with that? Just wanted to get your input on that.
I mean, I think he seems like the same guy when you see him in the locker room. He's still accessible in most cases. I haven't really noticed any ho-hum or lackadaisical play on the field.
I guess last week he had a touchdown against Tampa Bay. You know, he just kind of just dropped the ball. No celebration. He's had some big catches and haven't really seen much emotion out of him. So I just was curious if there was anything personal going on there, if it was just kind of where he's at, I guess.
I'm trying to remember. Was his touchdown against Tampa Bay their first? I know Boyd had the go-ahead one.
It was the last of the big three getting touchdowns. It was a easy throw right into the slot, and he just kind of waltzes in. It was one of the last ones in them helping to put the game away, if I remember correctly. Exactly. I had to go back and double-check the box score on that two games back now. But, it wasn't a good game for him yesterday. I mean – by his standards, certainly, and by most standards. I mean, you have him in the middle of the two turnovers, right? I mean, you've got of two of the three. You got the fumble, and then you have whatever happened on the miscommunication with Burrow on the pick six by Jones. So, and then Ja'Marr said he didn't want to talk after the game, right?
Yeah, and I wonder if he's confused by that. They've kind of gone to this new media policy where those guys only need to talk once a week, and that does not include post-game. So I don't know if he was – because I tried. He said he didn't want to talk. He would talk on Monday, which they're not available today. And I said, well, can I just ask you one quick question? I asked him. He said, sorry, bro, I'm going to go Monday. So I don't know if he was just confused by that the one day a week and he was just saving it, or if he was upset because – that fumble was huge, and there was also the deep shot that Burrow put right there.
Lost to Jay. I'll pick up from there. So I'll say this: you're right. I mean, the deep shot that he misses. You have the fumble. You have the pick six play. You've got all of these things, and Ja'Marr's not somebody to not talk after a game ever.
No,
you know, he's very open. He's always ready to talk about whatever, outgoing dude. So I think he had a bad game. I think it happens, right? I'm not going to hold that against somebody who had a bad game and wants to take some time to gather their thoughts, particularly someone who's always pretty outgoing. And then, yeah, the no celebration thing in Tampa, I think that's maybe reading into it a little bit much. I mean, it was I'll have to keep an eye a little bit more on that. It's not something that had stood out to me necessarily. Certainly not anything that I had seen around being around him in the locker room or heard from anybody who's close to him or anything like that. Something to keep an eye on, I guess. But yeah, nothing I don't think to be overly critical of at this point. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. Let's go and let's bring Fisher C up onto the stage. Fisher, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing good.
Great. Hey, just wanted to come on and say, Paul, you're not allowed to write about anything that Joe does well again.
No, I'm not responsible for back shoulder failures.
It's over. It's over. God, you let the secret out, and now he can't do anything on the back shoulder. But no, was the south end zone this weekend? Was it kind of resemblant of the Packers game last year, where the wind was just right or the elements were just right, nothing was going in down there? Because I'm not overly worried. I mean, Evans had a couple of stretches this year, but mostly he's been pretty good. I think that was a little bit of an abomination, especially when you saw New England's kicker do the same thing.
Yeah, it was really weird. The flags on top of the uprights weren't blowing all that much, but he talked about how there was a pretty strong crosswind. I didn't go down on at field level at any point. I just went and got in the warm press box and stayed there the whole time. But you're right. It was interesting. When you're watching it, we were kind of where our seat in the press box was, kind of on the corner of the end zone. So you're looking at it from the side. And then even the big screen replays were from the side. You couldn't really tell. You were just waiting to see the officials signal. When I went back and watched the TV copy, it did look like it was going straight and then just took this wicked turn. So maybe that was part of it. But it was noticeable even in pregame warmups, and going the other way, that the north end zone is where he was leaving kicks short that he normally makes easily. So I just think it was the cold, the ball not compressing. It's like kicking a rock. The wind was not consistent, but it was kicking up, kind of like you mentioned in the Green Bay game where Darren Simmons talked about it coming over the south bank of the stadium and just blowing it at the last minute. It was noticeable in pregame warmups that he didn't look like himself, and it kind of carried into the game. But I don't know that it's anything. And we kind of talked about this on the walkout. Is it an outlier or is it a trend? And it is concerning that we have not seen him miss these easy ones. Last year he was so automatic on those. So it'll be something to keep an eye on, because the weather's certainly not going to get any better the deeper they go.
Well, the one thing, you know, about the McPherson topic is that what we hear so often about what they really like about him is that nothing ever seems to faze him. Bad kicks, bad games, bad warm-ups. Darren told the story earlier this year about the practice he had before the game in Tennessee last year in the playoffs, right, where he missed like seven in a row to end mm-hmm. practice. They kept trying to get him to end on a make and he couldn't. It was just awful. And he said it's like they never even fazed the kid. He didn't even care. No big deal. Went out there and had a great game, all part of those great playoff runs that he had, kicking just game winner after game winner. You bank on that, right? You hope you can have this be a thing that doesn't spiral because of the personality that he has had. That said, I mean, the struggles that he's had at times this year are noted. But it's not like you can do anything. I think you're riding out Evan McPherson. Like, you're not, you're not like going to the wire and seeing if there's a kicker out there. You know, I mean, this is it. This is your guy. He's been great. He has a history of putting things like this behind him and being just fine. He's an absolute weapon from deep. Like, I understand the criticism. I hear people talking about, oh, well, they got to look at a different kicker. This is who you're riding with at this point. You have a far better chance of him being totally fine, putting this stuff behind him and kicking great the rest of the year, than you do somebody who's sitting on the street right now coming in here and suddenly being great. It's just, this is the guy. You hope he can get it straightened out. I've also seen people talking about, like, they need to make sure they're keeping him outdoors and stop going into that bubble. They don't go in the bubble with him. They kick in the elements, particularly whatever the elements are going to be that week. So last week, everybody goes to the bubble. I've almost been run over by the golf cart of Kevin Huber and Evan McPherson and Cal and Chrisman. They will go down to the bubble for a second if they do, and then they will take the cart all the way back down Mehring Way and attempt to scare the crap out of us in the process and go back into the stadium and kick in the stadium. So they can be on turf, so they can be outdoors, so they can be in conditions this time of year. They're very much cognizant of that. So it's not a thing where like all of a sudden people think he's been in the bubble, kicking in the bubble the whole time. That's not necessarily been the case. Okay, let's move on. Next question. Let's bring Sean C. up onto the stage. Sean, how you doing?
Hi, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
How's it going?
Good. I wanted to ask you guys what the disconnect is you guys think between how the team sees Jermaine Pratt and how Jermaine Pratt sees himself. I mean, I'm a fat 31-year-old sitting on my couch, so I don't know much about that kind of thing. But the eye test to me says that Jermaine Pratt's played as well, if not better, than Logan Wilson this year. I would think he's deserved a shot to play really whenever he'd like. So I'm just curious your thoughts on where that disconnect is and how that might affect potentially re-signing him this offseason.
I think it's more just the way they view the position, and they are thrilled with how Jermaine has played this year. He's been terrific, but he always felt a little limited in pass coverage. He's great against the run. They've got Trey Flowers as the guy, the specialist against tight ends for a reason. I just think that that's one element of it is how much they trust him to drop. Although we did see him make a great interception on a drop earlier a few weeks ago, but the other part is too. You talk about saving guys and load management, and maybe that's for the best for him to not play every snap and not to be out there 90-95% of snaps in the game. And he's better this time of year because of that, because he's not running himself or not being run into the ground. I don't think there's any disappointment whatsoever from the coaching staff with Jermaine Pratt. They love what they are getting from him, but he's like any other guy. He wants to be out there because he wants to be a part of it, and he wants to be out there because three down linebackers get paid and he's going into free agency next year.
Yeah, Pratt has played well. I like the way that Pratt has played, and I think there's going to be a decision to be had, and it'll be interesting to see what occurs when you get into the offseason, when you've got Logan Wilson, who you could extend. You've got Jermaine Pratt, who's available in free agency. What will his market be? And that's often the determining factor in these things, right? I mean, every time we start talking about players in free agency, the Bengals place their value on what that's worth to them, and they put it on the table. And if a player can go get more, they're not going to chase it. They're not going to go chase crazy value that they is above what they want to do just because it's somebody they've had necessarily. They might be willing to go a little higher sometimes, but they're not going to chase where they think now they're suddenly overpaying for a player. They'll just find somebody else or draft or replace, and it's certainly something they could do. He has earned himself a lot of money. I think Pratt's playing really well, and they have a lot of faith and confidence in him, and he's their type of guy. It will be curious to see. He'll be a very curious free agency case, but he's got a chance to, playoff P, right? He's got a chance to come back again and make even more money for himself if he can continue to play at this level as they go into these high-profile games down the stretch, Monday being the latest opportunity. A lot of money for a lot of people to make right now, Jay. There's a lot of people in contract years, a lot of people eligible for extensions, and a lot of people who are going to be playing in some huge high-profile games with a lot of other coaches and GMs watching saying, how do I get that on my team? Right? A lot of money on the line right now for these guys.
And that's just it with Logan Wilson, too, because, yeah, he's eligible for an extension next year, but they don't have to. They can ride out the final year on his rookie contract if you want to keep Pratt around, it's going to cost you. And it may not be top-tier linebacker money, but it's going to cost a lot more than you're paying him right now. And I think that's why you're more likely going to see them just stick with Logan and see what Jermaine can get on the open market. And if his value is not what he thinks it is, then maybe there is a path for him to come back on a more team friendly deal.
Well, who knows? There are a lot of important data points that are yet to be plotted in that conversation. So I hesitate to even go, because these are not conversations that they're having at this point. They might have ideas, but things certainly undeniably can change in a big way over the next 6 weeks. So I hate to even go that far into the conversation yet. All right, let's go next and let's bring Paul M. up onto the stage. Paul, how's it going?
Hello, good afternoon. Greetings from Ireland. Can you hear me?
It's that Paul
M. I can. This name, this voice sounds very familiar.
This is the long-winded test from Dublin, Ireland, calling in here. First timer in the live room here, but nice to talk to you all.
Yeah, great to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, Paul. You know, I mean, our favorite long-winded test, though.
Charming as always, Paul, but I appreciate the compliments. Thank you. Well, anyway, listen, sorry, just before I ask my question, can I just say on behalf of all the listeners, serious kudos to Jay for giving up a large chunk of your Christmas Day for our benefit, being in New England and not getting back to your family until the evening of Christmas Day. Very much appreciated, Jay, and I hope whatever last part of Christmas you got with your family finally late in the day was worth it. But thank you very much on behalf of all listeners.
Yeah, that's very kind of you to say, and it was. It was a nice evening last night, and I enjoy traveling and covering this team. It's a lot of fun, and you understand that holidays are part of it, but I do appreciate the kind words.
Absolutely. So anyway, I did have questions about the O-line, so on and so forth, but you spent quite a bit of time covering that already so far. So what I'll do is I'll broaden it out to the team a little bit wider. I do remember you guys, both of you, being very down in the mouth when Cheeto got injured 7 or 8 weeks ago, whenever that was. And I remember you outlining clearly your thoughts on how potentially devastating you felt it might be for the Bengals season. But with the benefit of now knowing what we know about the performances of Cam Taylor-Britt over the last 7 or 8 weeks, do you still think the Cheeto was the most impactful injury this team could have faced? Or do you think the Lael Collins injury could be more impactful in a negative sense?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Paul. As always, I'll say this. I mean, I still think that's the most impactful. I still think you're still continuing to see teams even more so attack Cam Taylor-Britt. I think Eli Apple had one target by the Patriots and Britt had 9. Teams are going after him a little bit more. We saw Brady going after him a little bit more. The same thing with Belichick the numbers on against Cam on Saturday are not too bad, but that's because you have a very high profile drop by Tyquan Thornton where he got beat deep and it was just a stone cold drop on what would have been a really explosive play in that game. And you're still clearly working through things there. And it's certainly what you're most nervous about defensively at this point. I think there's enough confidence in what they still have on the offensive line where they can survive the Collins thing. I don't think it's anywhere near as big of a deal as Cheeto is because of the way these games are going to be constituted. I mean, Mahomes, Allen, like they're just it's, and I know they've beaten the Chiefs without him. So you're saying you can do it, and they certainly can, but that's really the one spot where you're saying you hope that they're not going to continue to target and find ways to take advantage of them for a big play or two. That is going to be the difference in a lot of these games.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons, at least I think for Paul too, but definitely for me, when Cheeto went down and the reason we were so down is you had no idea what you were going to get in Cam Taylor-Britt. And I think he is, even though he hasn't played great, I think he's played better than what I probably expected him to play, definitely against the run. And you knew it was going to be a work in progress in coverage. The other piece of that was you're thinking it's not just what are you going to get from Cam Taylor-Britt, but what do you get from Eli Apple, who was just benched for Cam Taylor-Britt? And I think that's where the things have really changed is Eli has played pretty well. He turned things around. I don't know if that was an eye opener when they benched him for Cam in the Falcons game or what it was, but he seems to have dialed down the rhetoric on Twitter and he's just playing so much better. And I think that with Eli taking a step forward and Cam Taylor-Britt being maybe a little bit better than what you would expect a rookie corner thrown into that situation being, that's kind of mitigated the loss. But I still think that losing Cheeto and all that he is playing at a Pro Bowl level and what he brings leadership wise, that's still going to be the bigger impact ahead of what we will see happens with the LC replacement.
I'm so glad you said that, Jay. We need to make sure we're repeating the Eli Apple piece of this. Yeah. I mean, that has been a saving grace, that he has all of a sudden become really reliable and solid and very quotable. he may not be firing off on Twitter as much, although it's still very much out there. But he's comfortable firing off through us, which I really appreciate, as always. And certainly wasn't afraid to do it about Mac Jones, who apparently is not going to be suspended for that. Jay, I got a question. Here's my question. I'll put myself up on stage here. Dirtier play, Matthew Judon into Burrow's back, or Mac Jones to Eli Apple's knees?
Mac Jones by far. That could have been really bad. I think the Judon one was frustration, maybe a little message sending. It was kind of on par with the one that Trey Hendrickson had against Andy Dalton, where it was just ridiculously late. It was more a matter of how late it was as opposed to how severe the hit was that drew the flag. So I'm going Mac Jones by far. And I do this every week. I go through and I look at the plays that could possibly be fined. And I usually send off a letter to the league, and there's usually one or two. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 6 plays that are possible fines from that game, and 5 of them are against the Patriots. And the only one against the Bengals is Eli Apple. He took a swing at Mac Jones after he delivered that dirty hit, and it didn't connect. But I wonder if just taking a swing is something the league will take a look at. But we should get the answer on all those fines on Saturday.
Do you know what it takes to turn Eli Apple into a sympathetic feet figure online, and how big of a DB you got to be in order to turn the tables that way? Mac Jones, man, that's some, can't say I saw that being a level anyone could rise to, but there he is, Eli Apple, internet sympathetic feet figure.
Mac Jones. He could be facing 2 fines because he got the personal foul after the BJ Hill fumble. I went back. There's not a good look at it, but you see Mac Jones is on the ground, and it looks like it's just frustration. They've already ruled it's Bengals ball. BJ Hill is about to run off the field with the ball, and Mac Jones jumps to his feet and spears BJ Hill in the back and takes him down. And yeah. I think 2 or 3 officials throw the flag. That's definitely getting a fine. And then we'll see if he gets fined. I would imagine he'll get fined for the one on Eli Apple too. And I can't remember a quarterback ever being fined twice in one game.
Yeah. I will say, I think the Judon hit is just as bad. I don't care what he was trying to send a message or whatever. Mm. He speared him right in his back. That ball was long gone, right into the back of a quarterback. I just, that felt dirty to me. It's a matter of premeditation, right? Clearly, Mac Jones is premeditated. The Judon thing is premeditated as hell, too. I mean, that was 2 full steps and then still unloading right into the middle of a quarterback's back after he's already thrown the ball. I didn't like that one. That was the one I thought was dirtier. All right. Let's bring Michael B up onto the stage now. Michael, how are we doing?
Hey guys, how are you?
Doing great. Good.
Couple quick things. I was trying to get up this time last week to talk about some of the depth pieces on the roster, and obviously you guys wrote about it right after I was thinking about it. It's just funny to go back and look at, you know, I know you obviously expounded on it in your articles last week, but to go back and look at some of the games last year and see some of the guys that were playing critical snaps last year and making, you know, key good or bad plays. Obviously, you look at Darius Phillips with the punt muffs against San Francisco, you know, Zach Kerr playing meaningful snaps. Mm-hmm. Super, it's just wild to see kind of how that back end of the roster, as you guys talked about, has come a long way, and to see Trent Irwin catch another touch, you know, more touchdown. It's just wild to see how far things have come in a year. It just sort of struck me as you guys were talking about it last week and I was watching games back. Anyway, just as an aside there, I want to do some quick napkin math playoff prediction scenario things. Cause look, sure. I'm always a big, you play who you play, and obviously, you know, you gotta lace them up and go. But obviously the Bengals, you would argue, got a decent draw last year with the Raiders and the Titans before the Chiefs. And if you look at things this year, obviously, you know, unless the Steelers beat the Ravens on Saturday night, week 18 is going to be for the division anyway. Right. So not that you want to lose to the Bills, and obviously the number one seed is still very much in play, but you know, the three seed, I know you guys talked last week about the percentages of being, you know, in the Super Bowl with the certain seed numbers, and that's all interesting. And obviously, you know, those numbers come from somewhere, but you know, for me, if you're the three and you end up playing the Ravens again, I know Jay was not a big fan of that, and I understand the reasons why, but I don't know. For me, it seems like you'd rather play the Ravens and then the Chiefs in the divisional as the three, instead of playing like the Chargers, who for me, as Paul said, I don't want any part of the Chargers right now. They're getting healthy, and I don't want that quarterback anywhere near the field for me. You know, it just feels like Ravens Chiefs is a better draw than potentially, I don't know. It's weird that they could go, you know, Bills, Ravens, Ravens, Bills. Also, there's a lot of weird scenarios out there right now. And I'm just, you know, you never want to like, you can never throw a dart and see how it goes, but I don't know. To me, the Ravens end up being the more attractive first round matchup. They just can't score right now. And I, you know, Lamar is, who knows? It just, I don't know. I don't want any part of the Chargers, and I'm curious to see how you guys kind of think about it now, having watched the Ravens struggle again and Lamar, you know, may not be back again this week. There's just obviously a lot of question marks there. So I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Well, I agree that path, playing Kansas City in the divisional, would be ideal. I don't know that anybody wants to go to Buffalo. You see the weather they got this weekend, and the Bengals have beat the Chiefs three times with Burrow, and they won the AFC Championship game in Kansas City. There's a confidence there. If they lose that Monday night game to Buffalo, I mean, yeah, they'll be confident they can beat him a second time around, but it's not going to be the same thing as facing a Kansas City team. And then you give yourself that opportunity where maybe something crazy happens in that other divisional game and one of those wild card teams sneaks up and beats Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo's they've had great teams and they've not been able to finish the deal in the playoffs. So you would still keep that hope alive where if they win at Kansas City in the divisional round, they could still host the AFC Championship game. I go back to what I said before, that the only reason that the Ravens, not wanting to play the Ravens in back-to-back week, goes to history. I just don't like the idea of having to do that. But X and O, personnel, all that, yes, the Ravens would be the choice. And I think a lot of Bengals fans should be interested in that Monday night game tonight and be rooting like heck for the Colts, because the Chargers, they could end up on the wrong side of this and not even make the playoffs and not even be an option for the Bengals to play.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I think if you're going in order here, what's happened, though, is that to me is now the value of the two seed has gone up substantially, hasn't it? I mean, because the seven just looks like it's going to be a total crapshoot, right? You're going to have this totally down and out Miami team. That Tua looks awful. They are just a mess. This New England team that you just embarrassed for a half, you know how that should go. A Jets team who's good, but they've lost big games. They're still starting Mike White. Tennessee, Pittsburgh. I mean, getting to that two now, it was like Pittsburgh in the seven last year against Kansas City, right? Remember that game?
Yeah.
Everybody knew it was going to be a blowout. Everybody knew it was a joke that Pittsburgh was still in the mix, and that's that. Baltimore and the Chargers and Jacksonville in that four slot, which they'll be set in, assuming that they end up holding off the Titans, you know, to me are all on that clear second tier, and there's such a drop-off. Now, just getting to the two is a big deal. You know, I guess Baltimore will have to see what happens. I guess they could fall out of the six. The Chargers thing will be interesting to watch. they could fall 2-6, but I mean, more than likely they're still going to end up in that five hole. There's a lot of scenarios at play here. I think it's a play who you want to play because it doesn't matter at all. All you can do is try to go win. There's not going to be a scenario where they're like last year, where there's an advantage to losing, where they went out there and wanted to lose essentially. And so they could get into the 1-4 game against Tennessee. All that makes sense. That doesn't matter this year. You're going to be chasing that one, or you're going to be playing for the North. And as much as we like to run Austin Mock's scenario of them trying actually might be better to play as the five and go to Jacksonville, they would never try to do that. You're going to try to get that home game. You're going to want to win the North. So inevitably, it's all us filling time in a live room because they're going to be trying to go for. There is no advantage to not trying to win the next couple of weeks. They're going to have to play somebody. Yes, you don't want to play the Chargers, but it's going to fall how it falls.
I was going to say, because this affects us with the live room. We were excited about that Steelers Ravens game. Are there shenanigans at play here? Because everywhere I've looked, including on the NFL Zone game ops site, that only week 18, all the other flexes had to be announced 12 days in advance. Only week 18 could be announced
They can have one or two times they're allowed to move the window tighter.
Okay.
To a week. All right. Yeah. Yeah, that is part of it. They're going to have that in Sunday night. I mean, how about the Steelers? Like, this is like the most Tomlin thing ever. I mean, where this team is just terrible, down and out, but still, we're still talking about them. We're still talking about Kenny Pickett playing a playoff game.
Where are the Steelers on the list for Bengals fans of teams they don't want to see come to Paycor for a first-round playoff game?
You want to see the Steelers at this point. They're not good. They're not. I don't care who they are, what jerseys they wear, who their coach is. They're not good. And so you would love to see them. You know how to beat them. You've done it over and over again. You know exactly how to beat them, and you know how they could try to beat you, and that's an advantage too. All right. Thanks, everybody, for hopping into the live room. Appreciate it. Great to chat with everybody. We'll be back. Everything is a day late this week with the Monday night show, but we still got you coming regularly. So Wednesday will be our next episode. You'll get our first episode of the week on Wednesday. We will have a preview show on Friday. Then on Sunday, we will have the live room, which will be posted on our feed. Not live room, excuse me, live show at 50 West with Tyler Dunn, the Go Long folks. That will be posted on our feed as well. So you can listen to that as you wait for the game on Monday. And then, of course, all your coverage from Bengals, Bills, Monday Night Football. Really excited. Robert Mays is going to hop in with us. We're going to do a cross show where our show with myself, Jay, and Robert is going to go up on the Athletic NFL feed and also here with you on Hear That Podcast Growling. So we are all hands on deck, Jay, firing all cannons this week for Bills Bengals. So thanks to everybody for listening. We will catch you on Wednesday. Have a good one, everybody.